This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You know, I got to respect the effort from my man Tom back behind the glass to try to build up the excitement, build up the positivity here on this Sunday afternoon with some Queen, having a good time here on this Sunday afternoon. Dan Ball with you. Red Sox lose out on the opportunity to sweep the series against the Miami Marlins. They blow a lead in the eighth and ninth inning. They end up on the losing side, 5-3, your final. Hello to those listening here on WEEI 93.7, as well as our affiliates and the free Odyssey app. Dan Ball with you, taking you up until 6 o'clock here on this afternoon into evening. And I already see the calls lining up, so make sure you jump in line while you still have the opportunity. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Let's talk Red Sox, and tell me why you're mad, if you're mad, because I already see a couple people lining up to talk about a decision that I guess is going to be controversial for a portion of the fan base, the decision not to go to Aroldis Chapman at any point in the ninth inning. A lot of people very upset with Alex Cora and the coaching staff here on this Sunday afternoon with the decision to go to Garrett Whitlock in the eighth inning. He ends up giving up a run, and then the decision to go to Greg Weissert, and maybe even more than anything else, to go to Steven Matz after it seemed like Weissert just didn't really have it, which is also a very fair thing to assert. So 617-779-7937 is the phone number. No reason to waste any time. Let's go to the lines and begin with the first one in line. Sean is in Montana. What's up, Sean?
Hello. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Sure. On this Sunday afternoon. The losses like these, they just sting. And, yeah, I totally blame this game on Alex Cora. I'm disgusted, okay? I understand he put Chapman in Friday night, won the game. Saturday had to come in and get that last out, work and get the last out. He should have had Chapman in there for the ninth inning. There's no excuse for about that. Oh, he need an off day or something. We're in a pennant race, for crying out loud. Yep. These games matter. I mean, we've got two games coming up against the Orioles. They've been playing well of late. They're beating up on the Astros right now. And then you got four games against New York, and you need to make sure that you're prepared for that. But yeah, I mean, if you're out, come on, Alex Cora, seriously, you're better than that. Or would have been better if you would have put Garrett Whitlock in for the top of the ninth inning. I mean, I'm really disgusted. This is a game we should have won. No excuse to lose to the Marlins. And I know, seventh inning, they could have even blown the game wide open, but you got to be smart, Alex Cora, especially with the fact that that August and September is the heat of the pennant race, and I take these 2 months very seriously because, again, you want to make sure that you're gaining a lot of ground. I mean, we're 68-57. We're playing good,
right?
But we got to keep winning. And again, what's also real quickly, what's also frustrating about it, Toronto's going to lose their game. And it's like, why has it been so hard, Red Sox, for you guys to even catch the Blue Jays for first place in the AL East division? I understand the Blue Jays are good, but come on.
All right, Sean, thank you for the call. I'm going to go right back to the lines because Rick in Salem has the same complaint. What's up, Rick?
Yeah, Sean took a lot of the words out of my mouth.
I imagine,
but
yeah.
For starters, hey, no, I'm serious. For starters, Isaiah Campbell has no business even being on this team.
Correct.
This guy goes back to last year. This guy stinks. Give me a clue on this one. How could you send Brendan Bernardino down? He can still get out right-handed hitters.
Yep.
Okay? And I would take my chance with Bernardino. They do some of the stupidest things. And another thing, bro, Breslau at the trade deadline did not add a high-leverage right-handed reliever. And that's going to come back and bite them in the rear end. And their offense right now is sputtering a little bit.
All right, Rick, thank you for the call. The last one I'll put a pin in because there were two out of three games where you can argue that the offense didn't quite have it. Today, I still think you, with not having Alex Bregman starting, I think you can kind of chalk up a little bit of their struggles to that. It was also a rare day where Roman Anthony didn't really do anything. And you kind of realize how risky it is to build your hopes offensively around a kid who has, 200 career at-bats or whatever the number is climbing up to. You signed him to the contract, and I'm very happy that they did, but you have a lot of your hopes and dreams as an offense chalked up to what Anthony's going to do and then what Bregman's going to do behind him. And that's kind of just the way that the Red Sox have constructed themselves. There really isn't a lot of consistent pop behind it. Duran, he has his hot games. He has his cold games. Same thing with Trevor Story. Has his hot games, and then he has his cold games. And you see on a day like today where everybody kind of goes cold all at once, all of a sudden now you struggle to score runs consistently against a team like the Marlins that you should be able to handle. Let's talk about Aroldis Chapman not pitching in this one. And so the complaints that are coming in, again, he pitched, he threw 11 pitches on Friday, picked up the win in the walk-off victory, and then he threw four, had to throw four yesterday to pick up the save in game number two because Isaiah Campbell threw 17 and just absolutely imploded. Showed once again that as the callers alluded to, he should not be an option. He should not be an option one bit for this group. So the Isaiah Campbell thing is what led Chapman to come in yesterday, which is why he wasn't coming in today. I understand that the perspective, because he threw four pitches and 15 in total, the perspective is that, well, there's no reason that Chapman shouldn't be able to come in. He only threw 15 pitches. It's a lot more nuanced than that, because you also have to factor in the fact that he is getting up in the bullpen and throwing pitches and fully going through a ramp-up process on Friday to come into the game. He's doing that very quickly on Saturday to come into the game, so he's physically throwing a lot more. And you can also kind of watch by the usage that they're trying to manage Aroldis Chapman. They're trying to get him some off time. Right now, they're trying to kind of get him off his feet a little bit down the stretch. So, again, in the same reason that you gave Garrett Crochet 6 days off, then 8 days off, then kind of gave him some extended absences, you did that because you want him fresh for September. I kind of get the sense, based on the usage for Chapman, that they're doing the same thing. So before these two games in a row in which he threw in this series, he hadn't pitched since the previous Saturday, and that has not happened this season. But you go back a bit further, he pitched three out of four games to begin the month of August, the first, the second, and the fourth. He then does not pitch again until that game on Saturday in San Diego, then does not pitch again until the game on Friday against the Miami Marlins. So they're very much trying to manage what Chapman is doing here in the quote-unquote dog days of August in order to keep him fresh for September. I know that's not a good enough excuse. I know a lot of people are going to say, well, tough, you know what? You're in a pennant race, as Sean mentioned to lead us off. You're in a pennant race. You got to do what it takes to win. My guess, based on the way that it seems as though the Red Sox think about life in baseball, my guess, and it's the same reason that Alex Bregman didn't start today, my guess is they saw this as a series victory against a poor team with another poor team coming in on Monday and Tuesday. And my guess is they didn't view sweeping the Miami Marlins as overly important. They view it as you win two out of three games in a series, you're going to go places. Now, unfortunately, that view and the view of fans who view this as a very winnable game, of which I am one of, I completely understand the fury that's going to be met with the decision not to go to Chapman. Those do not match up. The view of the franchise taking two out of three and then giving Bregman a day off and not going to Chapman in this situation does not match up with the fact that fans understand that this was a very winnable game. Here's my biggest complaint, and we can talk about this more next at 617-779-7937. I've seen this bandied about on Twitter. I see it bandied about on the text line right now. As somebody's chiming in, actually, here, I'll read this verbatim. Can you please explain to these idiots blaming Cora that he's literally not allowed to use Chapman 3 days in a row? That's not his choice. Maybe blame the players for sucking, okay, and Breslow for having yet another dud of a trade deadline. Yeah, I mean, obviously, you blame the players in this situation. You're supposed to have some higher leverage arms behind Chapman that can get things done, and they didn't deliver, so that's one. This is absolutely on Craig Breslow. And I argued the entire time, not to pat myself on the back, but I argued that bullpen was going to be, based on the way the Red Sox deploy their bullpen, the fact that they just run these guys into the ground. They did it with Bernardino, and then they did it with Weissert, and then they did it with Slayton. All three of those guys were just absolutely abused by the Red Sox in various months during the season. I argued that adding high leverage bullpen arms was going to become way more important than people thought. As much as you wanted a cost-controlled starter, as much as you argued that maybe you could use a first baseman because the Toro and Romy platoon wasn't going to last or whatever else, adding another high leverage arm, a David Bednar, not necessarily Mason Miller, but I mean, given what Philadelphia gave up for Yoan Duran, or what, you know, the Yankees gave up a decent amount for Bednar, but again, a guy that can take the pressure off of Chapman so you can kind of have a 1A and 1B. That would have been a prudent move at the trade deadline. And once again, Craig Breslow was not willing to go there. He made moves trying to, once again, create this kind of closer or high leverage arm in the aggregate. He looked at Jordan Hicks and Jorge Alcala and Steven Matz as, well, between the three, matchup-wise, we'll be able to get outs in high-leverage spots. Unfortunately, there's just something about being a high-leverage reliever that you can't recreate in the aggregate or you can't really quantify. You have to be a little bit nuts to be one of those guys that pitches in the ninth inning. You have to either be extremely stoic or a sociopath. You have to be Mariano Rivera or Jonathan Papelbon on the spectrum of kind of being a bit nuts in order to do it. And that's not something that you can quantify. And the Red Sox didn't add one of those guys. So this is one of those games, again, where your lack of activity at the trade deadline bites you in the ass more than anything Alex Cora could or could not have done in order to salvage this thing. And as good as the Red Sox have been playing, and I have been extremely, extremely impressed with the way the Red Sox have been playing, I did not think this team had this kind of run in it. And I understand that. You've had a couple of games that have come through where your lack of trade deadline activity has bit you in the ass, unfortunately. And so that, I think, is what your takeaway should be from this game, more so than Cora should have gone to Chapman. No, he shouldn't have. He was down. That was clearly an organization-wide decision. that Chapman was not going to pitch. Okay, I see that people are lining up. They want to get in on the conversation. Lines are loaded right now. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Dan Ball with you, taking you up until 6 o'clock. Hang on the line for a couple of minutes. We're continuing to talk Boston Red Sox after their loss to the Miami Marlins at Fenway on this Sunday. 617-779-7937. More Sox talk on EEI coming up next.
Possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
an artist, an actress.
To visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes and I'll find a way.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, Swift Rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit DollarShaveClub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
617-779-7937. Red Sox fans upset at their manager, their general manager, their pitching. All of which you can kind of throw in the crosshairs on this one. The bullpen blew it. End of discussion from the 978. See, that's the kind of rationalization I certainly like. From the 413, if Breslow had traded Duran to get a high leverage arm for a bullpen, you would have been okay with that. Stop blaming the GM to suck up to the manager. I don't think it would have taken Duran. And Zach Coe, who produced today's Red Sox game, and I were talking about Ryan Helsley, who was the closer-ish for the St. Louis Cardinals. And the reporting coming out of that is that the conversation started with a prospect by the name of Miguel Blaze, who is a Rule 5 guy, essentially in the Blaze Jordan category if you would have had to protect him or lose him for nothing this offseason. So it would not have taken Duran to get the kind of high leverage arm that I'm talking about. But instead, you brought in Alcala and you brought in Hicks and you told Cora and company, here, make this work with what we're giving you. And it's not a back end of the bullpen that is built in the same vein as a team like the Yankees or a team like the Mets or, you know, these teams that went all in, or a team like the Padres, who you just saw this past week. Teams that actually went and built the back end of their bullpen in a champion style, a champion manner. You, as Craig Breslow and company, were not able to do that at the deadline. And I give Craig Breslow a ton of credit for what he did during the offseason. and it's major moves like Crochet, and it's smaller moves like Narvaez. He was able to build a darn good roster this offseason. But when the pressure was on for him to make high leverage, high quality championship caliber moves, he was not able to do it. And luckily, it hasn't reared its ugly head all that often since the trade deadline for the Boston Red Sox. But today was one of those days. 617-779-7937. Mike in Buffalo has been waiting the longest. Mike, how you doing, man?
Well, I'm doing good, but I mean, it's games like this that really roast me. They shouldn't even be on the field with the Red Sox. And they just, I don't know, this guy that pitched against him today, he probably couldn't get me out. But it's games like this
No, you're right. I agree.
Well, you know what I'm trying to say is the guy's not Don Drysdale. I mean, they could have lost all three games in this series. How they struggled against this team. I think it was 2-1 Friday, right? 2-1, 7-5, and they lost today.
Right.
See, these are the things about the Red Sox. Inconsistent. They're, and you got Yoshida, the ground ball champ, hitting cleanup. I don't put anybody down, but how do you make a lineup with him cleanup when 90% of the time he hits the ball on the ground?
No, it's very true, Mike. Thank you for the call, and I'll let you go there. Today was one of those days without Bregman in the two hole, because then you move Trevor Story up to the two hole, you move Yoshida up, you move Abreu up. That's all of a sudden the lineup starts to look kind of thin on you. And you have a couple other things that are kind of floating around on the offensive side. And just to mention them very quickly, Sidon Rafaela has an OPS in the 300s as a second baseman, which is a bit of an oddity. But it's certainly something to follow, especially hearing Willie Abreu in his postgame comments saying that he doesn't believe what happened today is going to lead to an IL stint. So you're assuming that he claimed that he is day-to-day. So my guess would be you probably see him back in the lineup for that Yankee series starting on Thursday. Maybe you give him a couple days against the Orioles and you have Rafaela back out there in the outfield. But if you plan on him being your second baseman and with Marcelo Meyer having season-ending surgery, it seems like he's going to be your second baseman. He's got to find a way to hit the ball as a second baseman. And so you don't have that pop in the 8 and 9 spot. And unfortunately, Carlos Narvaez's offensive production has gone off a cliff. And I don't know if that's injury-related. I don't know if it's just kind of the wearing down of a guy who has not played this kind of game total, this kind of game load as a major leaguer or really at all before. And he mentioned it in an interview on the Section 10 podcast. It's not like he couldn't play 100 games before. He just wasn't given the opportunity to. Well, that's all fine and good. But once you get into the 110s, the 120s in terms of games played as a guy who's never done it before, it's natural to catch up on you. So you're missing two very important right-handed bats. So when you pull Bregman out of the mix, it kind of starts to look pretty thin pretty quickly. So the point is well taken about the offense, but the pitching still remains the story of the day, and that is when we go to Tom in Rhode Island. What's up, Tom?
How are you?
Good. What's up?
So a couple of things I want to ask you. So why do we have Jordan Hicks on this team? I noticed he did not pitch since Monday. So why wouldn't they bring him? He's been a closer before. And why wouldn't they bring him in the ninth inning? Is that like Cora sending a message to Breslau that he doesn't trust him? Because I wondered about that. And then we have that other guy, Giovanni, whatever his name is, one that was from
Moran,
Minnesota.
Yeah.
We had three bums in the bullpen. Like, we have Bernardino, and I know they have to stay down there for 15 days
right.
when they're sent down. So I'm thinking one of him or Criswell would be better than these two beauties that they – but what do you think? Do you think – Corden doesn't have confidence in him because he blew that game against the Astros. He gave up a home run Monday, but he has not pitched since that day. So what do you think about that?
Thank you so much for the call. And I think he hit the nail on the head perfectly. I think it's a significant lack of trust and just a bit of a, and this is something that the manager has done from time to time, just a bit of a suggestion up top that, hey, this isn't working. I know that you gave me this guy to use, but I can't trust him in any kind of situation, let alone a high leverage save situation as he was probably intended to be in. But yeah, an 8.22 ERA over his last seven games, 7 2/3, 9 hits, 7 runs, 4 walks, 7 strikeouts, and a loss for Jordan Hicks. So that is, well, Aroldis Chapman was held out, I think, just to try to manage the innings and get him off his feet. I think Jordan Hicks is being held out because he is not considered by the manager of this ball club to be a high leverage option. And that's where, going back to the trade deadline, I think this whole issue stems from. You have guys that were intended to be high leverage options, and Hicks and Alcala, I think, are the two guys that fit that category. Mats was never supposed to be an eighth, ninth inning guy. He's just a, again, a lefty that was also kind of a redundancy to Brendan Bernardino. That's why the entire takeaway from the trade deadline for this team makes no sense. You needed a high leverage arm. You got Hicks, and now you have a guy who's been DFA'd, and you didn't need a left-handed reliever, but you've now brought in Mats, and you've sent Brendan Bernardino down, despite being one of, I'd consider to be, your more consistent relievers, especially when he got used, whatever it was, 17 times in May or something like that. So the plan for the bullpen was just all over the place. And you can cross your fingers, cross your toes, and hope that Justin Slayton, who has been throwing in full uniform, by the way, why do they make him throw in full uniform? Is what about that is important to the rehab process? But whatever, I digress. It looked good. I guess it gives you a little bit more confidence. Oh, he's pitching in uniform on the mound. He's basically back and healthy. You can cross your fingers and hope that he's able to get back to be your, I guess, number two behind Aroldis Chapman, wedge him in right there between Whitlock and Weissert and then Chapman. But he hasn't pitched since June, and we were talking about, you know, dead arm and fatigue and a lot of very concerning things for a pitcher when it comes to their throwing arm. So I wouldn't be able to bank on that either. So 617-779-7937. A lot of opinions lining up on the Boston Red Sox. We have Liam, who wants to talk about pitching, Mike, who wants to talk about Cora, Steve, who wants to talk about a unique solution to the infield-outfield problem. We still have a line open, so you can jump on at 617-779-7937. What is the B under your bonnet with the Boston Red Sox right now? We'll continue to talk Red Sox baseball next. Back here on WEEI, Red Sox fall to the Miami Marlins, a team that, as was described by one caller just a few moments ago, a team that shouldn't even be on the same field as the Red Sox. And, you know, there's a sneaky amount of young up-and-coming talent with the Marlins. They have some guys in their mid-20s that look like they have a little bit of excitement, but If you were playing the baseball immaculate grid and you filled in a bunch of these guys, you'd get very, very low percentages, because there are some names I looked at and went, who on God's green earth are you and why are you playing in Major League Baseball? But they gave the Red Sox a fight in actually all three games of this series. 2-1 win for the Red Sox. They walk off with the win on Friday. 7-5, they hang on for the win, which ends up being a big cog in why you lose 5-3 on Sunday. So you lose out on the chance to sweep. Your 2-1 over this five-game homestand. And as my guy Thomas Christofioli, who's back behind the glass, noted, Christian Arcan doesn't have to do something pretty rough that he said he was going to have to do on his show. I think that was on Thursday night when he said that.
I believe it was Thursday night.
Are you including that in your trending in 15, 20 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay, so stay tuned for trending and hear from Tom exactly what Arcan does not have to do.
Kind of sad he doesn't have to do it.
For the memories.
See if you would pony up and do it.
I don't know. I mean, he talks a pretty big game, but he seems like a guy who would follow through on that.
Right in that chair right there, live on the air.
Absolutely, exactly. And then you'd have to throw this one in the dumpster. 617-779-7937. Liam is in Portsmouth. What's up, Liam?
What's going on? Well, there's a lot to unpack here. Going back to what that earlier texter said about Duran, it's just ridiculous.
Yes.
Morale and chemistry is just as important as talent, and I think we forget that as fans. It's why Story is still here after that awful, awful slump he had. But that's not why I'm calling. I mean, we're talking about what's going on here. It is a lot of these Buehler starts. We're being forced to use these high leverage arms time in and time out, day in and day out, which is costing our bullpen significantly, which is costing us significantly with these wins. But then when you have someone like Isaiah Campbell, and because you need another righty. You don't need another righty if he can't perform, if he sucks. So what's wrong with having an extra lefty up there like Bernadino? At some point, you have to have the talk about getting rid of Buehler or sending him down at least something when you have Cooper Criswell and Kyle Harrison just knocking on the doorstep, just ready to come in and play.
Liam, thank you very much for the call there on that one. The Buehler point was one that I wouldn't have jumped to right away. It for me, my biggest issue and the thing that has been most consistent, at least for me, is those middle relievers that you talk about, Campbell and then Alcala before him, and you know the guys that have struggled the most in those fifth, sixth into seventh, maybe bleeding into the eighth innings. Those guys, the ones that are having the chance to record the very, very seldomly cited stat in baseball, the hold. The guys that blow that opportunity more so than a guy like Walker Buehler. On the specific topic of the starting rotation, because I think it's an interesting one. Lucas Giolito bounces back and gives you a bit more reason to trust him as your number three. By the way, Brian Baio right now is your number two pitcher far and away. He has become a low three ERA starter since I think it was the All-Star break last year. So he has really kind of come into his own. He's also solved the issues that he had pitching during the daytime with Alex Cora saying the solution was very simply he had kids. Now he has to be up early so that he can take care of his kids. So he's kind of gotten through the night owl syndrome that he had as a younger man. So that checks one or checks two boxes because Crochet's your ace, Bayo's your two. Giolito has now had, out of his last six starts, has had three bad, three good. So I wonder a bit about that in September because, again, he did not pitch last year. And the year prior when he was dealt at the deadline to Cleveland and then, you know, later passed on to the Los Angeles Angels, he had a 7 ERA with both teams after the trade deadline, which is why he ended up shaking loose and, you know, becoming a free agent and then signing on with Boston. And one thing leads to another. He misses the year and now he's here. So there is not a great sample size in the last 2 years. Mainly, he didn't pitch last year. But even before that, he was not good down the stretch for either one of those teams. So something to monitor with Giolito. And then Buehler in May. I mean, roll the dice. Spin the wheel. You have no idea what start you're going to get day in and day out from either one of those two. Buehler is the kind of guy I want to root for because I think his playoff experience and his mentality is something that not a lot of guys on this roster have. But the sheer talent at this point is something that gives me pause. So I think if you start a playoff series today, I would think in a 7-game series that Walker Buehler is still your fourth pitcher, but it's probably a very, very, very small leash before you get to, I would guess, Dustin May piggybacking off of him as your essentially second starter. Cooper Criswell, the point is well taken. It's one start. As much as I guess I would be curious to see if he can replicate it, you decided that Dustin May was a better addition than keeping Criswell in your rotation as that fifth guy. But I think what's really interesting to watch down the stretch is, does Kyle Harrison get a turn in the rotation? Because he has been dynamite the last few times out in AAA. And does Peyton Tolley start to push for a spot? Because he was awful in his first couple innings of his first start in AAA, settled down, and then he went five innings yesterday with, I think, just either one earned run or zero. He was outstanding. So you have two lefties that are really starting to change the conversation at the bottom of your rotation. We wouldn't see them in a playoff series, but they could be pretty important or pretty useful cogs down the stretch to try to take a little pressure off of Buehler, take a little pressure off of May and Giolito, and give some extra support to Crochet and Bayo. So once again, at least in your rotation, you have guys that make you go, oh, I have some hope there. The bullpen is just, my God, I have Isaiah Campbell and Giovanni Moran in the same bullpen with Brendan Bernardino in AAA and Justin Slayton starting to get close, but still not overly close to returning. The puzzle on the pitching side is a real conundrum. And that's why, and I know that I've supported Cora multiple times in the span of whatever I've been on, half an hour now, but I just don't know how you can look at the look at what's been assembled for him in terms of the inconsistencies on both sides of the ball, pitching it, hitting, and go, yep, that's Cora's fault. I just don't get it. And there is a vocal minority of Red Sox fans that are just never going to let it go. And that's fine. That's fine. And eventually, maybe the well runs dry and Cora gets let go and it's viewed as a post 2018 failed tenure and he's a cheetah and he's this and he's that. And I understand that. And that may happen at some point, but I'm going to remain pro Cora until I'm given more evidence that I shouldn't. Because I think with the youth and inexperience and inconsistency, good Lord, what a word to trip on, of this team, the fact that they're in the position they are, I'm more than willing to support him and the job that he has done. But the subject line for Mike in Myrtle Beach says Cora, not good or bad, so we'll find out together. Mike, what's going on, man?
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, what's up?
All right, so a little bit different take on Cora. First of all, no more scheduled or unscheduled days off for position players, okay?
Sure.
You don't have the luxury that Toronto has where you're six games up, where you can rest the Bregman. You need him every day.
Yep.
And Romy Gonzalez, his at-bats today proved that. They were pitiful.
Absolutely.
I think he was free. He was free swinging the whole every time he was up there, all three at-bats or four at-bats. So that was the first thing. The second thing is he should have I agree with you on Chapman. Chapman or those that say Chapman shouldn't have been pitching today. I agree totally on that.
Right.
What you do is then your next two best arms are Whitlock and Matz. So you just move them up. You take Matz from seventh to eighth inning, and you put Whitlock in the ninth inning. And I know what you said about Matz is not comfortable. Well, it's an uncomfortable day. So, you know, I would have put Matz in the eighth, Whitlock in the ninth. You know, and then then basically go with that because those are your two best relievers. I don't believe they both pitched yesterday, so they had a couple days rest. Is that correct?
Yes, and thank you for the call. So just to give the information on that, so Whitlock threw four pitches on Friday, did not pitch yesterday, so he was rested and ready to go. And then Steven Matz threw eight pitches yesterday, so he was still able to go that second inning. And I think that Mike and I think Mike is onto something interesting that would go against the Red Sox current way of thinking because they still view Greg Weissert as probably either their second or at very worst their third high leverage arm right now. It is Chapman and then Whitlock and or Weissert. And then I think there's kind of a gap to get to the rest of the bullpen where it's Wilson and Matz as your next two, and then the three that follow of Campbell, Moran, and Hicks. I mean, I don't know.
You blew it!
Throw them. Yeah, exactly. That's the intro music for any one of the three of them because you can't trust them at all. So it's an interesting point about Matz, and it's a pretty interesting departure for him in his career because he was a can't-miss prospect for the Mets. He was a starter for a long time. He signed with St. Louis, and he's kind of transitioned into being a bullpen arm. And this has been the best year of his career as a reliever by some length, and arguably the best year of his career, full stop. But he still hasn't earned the level of trust that the Red Sox put in Whitlock and Weissert in those high leverage spots, and It hasn't clicked for Reddit because they haven't really given him the opportunity to prove it, good, bad, or otherwise. So it's going to be really fascinating because if Weissert becomes a guy that you can't trust in these higher leverage spots and you only have Chapman and Whitlock and then a big old question mark behind that, you're going to need to get uncomfortable to Mike's point. You're going to need to go with a Wilson or a Matz or – well, that's just about it to this point before Slayton comes back. But you're going to need to get more comfortable being uncomfortable with some of these guys if Weissert cannot be relied upon. And unfortunately, they've just used him so much that I wonder what the next six weeks looks like for Greg Weissert, hopefully going into October. This kind of happened last year for him where he was pitching a lot. and ended up being optioned down to AAA right around this time last year. And then he came up either back half of August or beginning of September and was untouchable down the stretch and was about the only thing that was working for the Red Sox at that point is they really fell off in September. But he was outstanding. So, again, I wonder if a break would be useful for Weissert. But, again, then what? Then who are you replacing him with? Because clearly they viewed Isaiah Campbell as a replacement for someone in this bullpen, and that's what you end up getting. 617-779-7937. Steve is in Boston. Getting creative, Steve. What's up?
Okay. I was at the ball game today, and I looked at that starting lineup, especially the infield, and it was horrible.
Yeah.
So here's my thought, and bear with me on this one.
Sure.
It's not going to happen, but okay. This is how I would do it.
Okay.
I would take Roman Anthony, and I would move him from left field, and I'd put him at first base.
Okay, why?
Because he's left field at Fenway is easy. If the ball's hit over your head, it's just going to go off the Green Monster. He could never play center, and he could never play right. I love Roman Anthony. Don't misunderstand me.
Sure.
But I think he would be – and the guy was right about you got to play at your best now. So I would go with Roman Anthony at first. I don't know who at second. Story at short. Bregman at third. Now you got two hitters at the corners, first and third, because your first baseman's got to be a power hitter.
Right.
That's Anthony, right? You can't have a guy – Abraham Toro at first base. That is not scary for anybody.
No, it's not.
Okay, so you put so I would go with Anthony, somebody else, probably Romy Gonzalez for now, and you can't put Zidane Rafaela again at second base. That is the biggest waste of talent I've ever seen.
All right, Steve, I gotta let you go on that point. Thank you for calling, and as always, I appreciate any and all versions of creativity when it comes to solving what still seems to be a roster issue, as Craig Breslow decided not to make a move involving an outfielder at any point during the season, offseason, into the trade deadline, and so now you're reaping what you sow, which is Zidane Rafaela not being a very strong hitter while playing second base, which is an odd coincidence, but when you look at Zidane Rafaela's career, the more instability he has as a fielder, the more you move him around, and that's been the Red Sox MO in years past as they've played him in center and short and third and second and a little bit in the corners, and they've moved him all up and down the lineup. He has struggled. The more consistency that Zidane Rafaela has gotten in his career, playing center field, hitting seventh, eighth, or ninth, bottom third of the order, that's when he plays his best. So, unfortunately, that just seems to be kind of part of it now. When you pull him out of his routine, it screws with his ability to hit the ball. So I appreciate the attempts to solve this in a different way, but I'm not taking Roman Anthony out of the outfield. And neither are the Red Sox. And again, and I appreciate any kind of creativity to try to solve this, but Anthony is an outfielder. He's going to be your left fielder of the future, and I see no reason to disrupt that in the interim just to maybe solve a problem for Rafaela, who is, in his career, a very streaky hitter, and also a pretty poor hitter both in August and September. So I don't want to screw with Anthony. Anthony has been out freaking standing. We have stats that we read where it's first since Ted Williams and fourth in MLB history and all this kind of stuff that he's doing. So trying to teach him a new position is last on my list of things I want to do. And unfortunately, we saw what happened with Christian Campbell when you started to move him all around. I'm not doing the same thing with Anthony. Let him play the outfield. He can DH every now and again. Solve your issue elsewhere. You want to talk about real ideas that I'd be interested in? Put Jarren Duran back to the position he played in college in his first year in the minors at second base. I would rather have that conversation than have any conversation about moving Roman Anthony. I can't. I can't start to teach a guy a new position when he's having the kind of start to his career that he is. 617-779-7937. You can still jump in line if you have any leftover thoughts on the Boston Red Sox losers to the Miami Marlins here in the final game of their series, game three of a five-game homestand with the Orioles coming to town for a two-game set beginning tomorrow. Plenty more to come here on WEEI, but before any of that, Tom Crisafulli has to tell you what's trending.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe, without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything, to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you, from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit DollarShaveClub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
617-779-7937 is the phone number. Continuing to take your calls reacting to the Boston Red Sox. They fall to the Miami Marlins. Everybody is taking their chance to weigh in. I'll read a tweet and then give you the name of who it's from. Final word on not using Chapman. Use your closer and one-run games in the ninth 100% of the time. You never know when you'll be in that situation again. I know he threw four pitches yesterday when they blew a big lead. Use him today. Every game matters. They gave one away, plain and simple. That is from Dave Portnoy of Barstool Sports. So everybody has voiced their opinion on whether Chapman should have came in today. 617-779-7937. Tim and Lowell has been hanging on for a bit. Tim, thanks for your patience. How you doing, man?
Hey, Dan. Listen, I'm glad you talked about Roman Anthony prior to the break, because that's the reason I called. People legitimately should be mad at Coro about handling the pitching, but it's been well documented the mistakes they made.
Right.
I want to talk about Roman Anthony, Dan. Guy who got over 300 in the month of July. Which one of these hitting coach geniuses decided it was a good idea to change his batting stance, Dan? Have you noticed in the last week or 10 days they changed his batting stance?
No, what's the tweak you noticed? What's different?
The tweak, he used to hold his bat basically straight up and down. A la Ted Williams, by the way, had a batting stance like that.
Right, ironic.
He changed his batting stance now so that the head of his bat is now pointed towards the stance. It may not be a great change that people would notice, but it's a big change for somebody who's used to hitting a certain way. And he looks very uncomfortable. Now, I don't know which one of the hitting coaches. Lou Maloney talked about the change on the TV the other night.
Right.
I don't know which one of these guys made the change. But there isn't a single hitting coach, Dan, on that roster that had any success hitting at the big league level. There's only one of them that even played at the big league. Louis Ortiz played for Kansas City. He hit 240 in 60 games. None of those other guys even played above A ball. One of them never even played minor league baseball. The other one played independent league baseball. The only one who even played single A baseball was a guy who was a head batting coach, Francis, or however you pronounce his name.
Right.
He hit 230 at single A, and he is their head hitting coach. Is there nobody that they could find who had experience as a successful hitting coach in the big leagues that they could bring in the house? Where are they getting these guys from, like a baseball version of Madden? The guys who play computer games and they hire them to be hitting coaches? I don't get it. You get the guy who's the number one baseball prospect of all of baseball, who looks like he has the potential to have a great career, and you're screwing around with this guy because he had a few bad games on the road trip with Philadelphia. Find a guy who changes batting stance, Dan. That's what I say.
Tim, thank you for the call. Call back anytime. That's the energy we're looking for here after a Red Sox loss. And while he was explaining his point in depth, I was looking at some images and just trying to kind of pick up on a little bit of the difference. And you can see a little bit of a difference where, as he pointed, instead of being a bit more straight up, it is angled a little bit, so kind of back towards his shoulder. So if you're at Fenway, it's back towards the Red Sox dugout. I would imagine, without being in anything close to a major league clubhouse, that the thought process is if you already have your bat angled that way, then you should be able to get the bat around quicker. So it should help you be able to catch up to, you know, 97, 98, 100 miles an hour on the fastball. That would be my guess if that's what happened. He did not record hits in three out of his last four games, but before that had a 1-2-3-4 five-game hitting streak and has still been on base pretty consistently. So his batting average got up to .286 in the second-to-last game against Houston. It's down to .276 after three games out of the last four without any hits. So there are consistently tweaks going around for every player. So I don't know if I can just blindly pin it on it was a staff decision. It very well could be a player decision. We know that Jaron Duran changes his batting stance on a weekly basis. Almost he changes to a leg kick. Then he removes the leg kick. Then he's more open. Then he's closed. And, you know, these guys tweak things. So I would be just as willing to say that it's just Roman Anthony looking at something. I would be more willing to say that it's Roman Anthony and talking with Alex Bregman and making that chance. Like, you see, when Anthony does something good, he goes right to Bregman to have the conversation. So maybe they were looking at the iPad and looking at something. There are a million different factors that go into these guys making mechanical changes. And if there is any player that I'm not worried about right now in whatever changes they are or are not making, It's Roman Anthony. So far, whatever it is working. I mean, yes, three out of the last four games without hits, but he's still getting on base, and they're still winning ball games. So with that in mind, we go to Mike in the car with one of my favorite subject lines I've seen in a while. What's up, Mike?
Hey, I just wanted to talk about how just because someone is a great hitter doesn't necessarily mean they're a great hitting coach.
Right.
And Ted Williams is an example of that. Back in the 60s, after Ted had retired, he was kind of a roving instructor for the majors as well as the minors. And he was at one day at the park, and he was watching a couple of guys do hitting practice. And he says, you know, in his typical fashion, he goes, "God darn it, that's not how you do it." And he walks up, and he grabs the bat, and he gets to the plate. Now, the first pitch that's thrown, he's overwhelmed because, you know, he hasn't swung a bat in years.
Right.
But after about two or three, he starts spraying it all over the field. And, I mean, it was beautiful. He was probably 50-odd years old when he throws down the bat and he says, "That's how you do it." Well, that's great, Ted. You're Ted Williams. You can't expect a kid who's learning how to hit the ball to be able to pick up the bat and go with it. You know, hitting instructors either can hit or they can't hit. And what I mean by that is they know the science of hitting. If you take away that science, these guys would probably hit the ball about 100 to 150. But if they learn the game, they improve the way that they bat. I have a lot of faith, actually, in the hitting instructors as a result.
Mike, thank you for the call, and that's a rational way of looking at that. And my favorite example to go over to the hockey side is Wayne Gretzky. Theoretically, Wayne Gretzky, being the best hockey player of all time, should be the best hockey coach of all time, right? Like, what more could you need to do than just do it how Wayne does? He was the head coach of the Phoenix Coyotes, and they sucked. So that's why you see a lot of your managers and a lot of your coaches. Your managers are your catchers or your backup catchers. That's why a guy like Kevin Cash is one of the best managers in baseball. He was a journeyman, backup catcher, played a little bit for the Sox, played all around. But he's a smart guy, learned the game, knows the ins and outs of the game, knows how to study the game. And that's what makes him a good coach. And a lot of times you see that at different levels where, you know, these guys start out coaching at the same level that they played. So for Fatsy, whatever the caller mentioned, Fatsy probably started in single A and showed that he has a knowledge of the game that would far supersede his actual talent. And then you move up and you catch on with the right coaching staff. And it's like anything. You get lucky breaks, you catch on with the right guy, you move up through the ranks, and then eventually you get your shot at the major league level. So yeah, there's a lot more nuance into teaching. I know that the conventional saying is those who do, those who can't do, teach. And I think it's a bit, it's less black and white than that. But I think that's the kind of thought that goes behind it is, you know, just because these guys don't have major league level talent, a lot of guys have major league brains and major league knowledge of the game that don't end up translating to be actual major league hitters. So that's where the hitting coach side of it comes through. And I would also just reassert again that there are millions of different factors that go into that's a bit of a hyperbole, but there are a lot of different factors that go into a swing change. I wouldn't just be so quick to say, oh, it's the hitting instructors. They're telling them to do this, that, and the other thing. If it's a hitting coach going, hey, Roman, I know you're like the best rookie that Major League Baseball has seen since Ted Williams and Ichiro Suzuki. Maybe you should angle the bat back a little bit. That's crazy. So I would like to believe that it's not a coach telling him to do it and him just blindly doing that. At very worst, I think it's a conversation that comes with something that's been well documented, which is a change in the way that the Red Sox have approached their hitters meetings and the way that they approach coaching individuals, where before they had team meetings and you'd come in and, all right, Sadon, what are you going to look for today? Oh, well, I'm gonna look for the curveball. And then Duran's sitting next to him, and they ask Duran, okay, so Duran, what do you want to do? And, oh, I'm also going to look for the curveball. They've changed it. They've changed their approach to where it's more individualistic. You have to study the night before because they have individual one-on-one hitters meetings to go through individual plans of attack versus let's just paint with a broad brush. Everybody's looking for the curveball. It has to be individualistic, and that's what they've changed it to. So I would like to believe that in this new way of thinking and coaching for the Red Sox, they collaboratively found something that seems to be working, and Roman obviously acknowledged it, made that change, and he's also been in Major League Baseball since June 9th. So we're talking about a half of a season's worth of games, if that, even less than that. So if it doesn't work, he's going to change it back. But clearly it's something that everybody has acknowledged is going to work, and Roman feels comfortable enough doing. And guys, he's awesome. That's all. In through the nose, out through the mouth. Big, deep breath on this one, and that's what we'll do. Okay, I told Thomas that we'd do this about an hour ago, but I do want to squeeze this in because I have you up until 6 o'clock here on WEEI. Alex Cora spoke to the media after the conclusion of a disappointing game for his group. Here's what he said.
Just the way Garen pitched today, how tough was it? Just to kind of just see the other side of the
life. It's tough. I think it was a weird game. I think offensively we didn't do much. We were rushing into a batch. Although the stuff was good, kind of like a lot of quick outs, you know, so we didn't put pressure on them. He felt it running the bases and when they was the seventh, I think it was, so I don't know. I'll check with him later on.
Did you see what the guys in the bullpen, Weissert?
He hung a slider. The kid put a great swing on it, and then, you know, fastball in the zone, another great swing, yeah.
On a day without your closer, how do you go about deciding who gets to an inning tonight?
We meet before the game, and we go through matchups and pockets and all that, and, you know, we felt like Witt in the eighth made sense. They score one, and then we weren't able to hold them in the ninth.
What was plan A when you went to Whitlock in the eighth for to use him for maybe both of the last two innings?
No.
If he was efficient?
No.
No.
What did you think of Pat Crochet overall?
There was a lot of traffic. They put pressure the whole day on us. I think from the fifth inning on, the leadoff guy got on and he made pitches when we had to. He got some ground balls with men at first, but there were always choppers, whatever, so they advanced to second. But, you know, he was good. You know, gave us a chance to win. Thank
you. Abreu, any sense of it's more than a day-to-day?
Honestly, I don't know. He went in, game over. I haven't talked to Brandon or Masai, so I'll know more now.
Okay, that was Alex Cora in his postgame. Relatively short and sweet there for the manager of the Boston Red Sox, who unequivocally stated that Garrett Whitlock was not being considered to pitch for multiple innings at the end. I would wonder if that was a bit of a gamble for the Red Sox coaching staff, that getting into the bullpen, you might be able to extend the lead a little bit in the eighth inning. That would be my wonder, that you pitch Garrett Whitlock in a 3-1 game with, get through the meat of what you're hoping to be the order for the Marlins, get through the highest leverage after Garrett Crochet, and then you get the bats back up in the bottom half of the eighth inning. And the reason I say that is you had Story, Duran, and Yoshida in the bottom half of the eighth. So other than Anthony, you had what is supposed to be the heart of your lineup in the eighth. So you pitch Whitlock, you get through that part of the order because they started with Marcy, who pinch hit, and then went back up to the top. So something that they've done with Aroldis Chapman is pitch him earlier in the game in order to face the hardest part of the lineup. So your thought was you get 9-1-2, and Whitlock can make his way through that, and then you hope that the Red Sox with 2-3-4 coming up in the eighth, you'll be able to tack on a run, maybe two, get it out of a save situation, and then you can go to Weissert with a little bit more room. That gamble failed in two different ways because you're able to get a run off of Whitlock in the top half of the eighth inning, and then the Red Sox go 1-2-3 very quietly in the bottom of the eighth. So your gamble leads to an even closer game and Greg Weissert having to get three outs before he gives up one run, and it fails. So if I were to guess based on past sample sizes of how the Red Sox go about those situations, that would be my guess, is that's what they were trying to do with Whitlock facing what they deem to be the most important part of the order. And it just doesn't work. And now we're talking about 2 out of 3 instead of a sweep. One more call before we take a break. Matt is in the car. What's up, Matt?
Hey, how you doing? I'm glad you had that little conversation about what goes on in the team meetings, because I would like to know what the scouting report was on this pitcher, because I really don't understand why they were so aggressive at the plate, especially with this guy having a 4 ERA. I mean, they were giving him 10 pitches or less almost every inning, and they really, I didn't see much plate discipline, and I thought that really hurt him.
Matt, thank you for the call, and I appreciate that. That is actually an important detail of this. So Junk, despite his last name, is actually, you could argue, the most accurate pitcher in the league. He is the best in the league when it comes to walk percentage. I think the number that I heard, he had walked 8 batters coming into the start today or something to that effect. So I would have to venture a guess that the general thought process, which is why you saw Roman Anthony, who never does this, swing at the first pitch of the game, is he's going to throw you strikes. He's not going to walk you. He is going to attack you. So the Red Sox tried to match aggression with aggression so that they didn't fall behind 0-1, 0-2, 1-2, things like that, because if you put the bat on your shoulder and wait, that's what was going to happen against this guy. So that's kind of the all or nothing part of facing this gentleman, Jansen Junk, this 29-year-old pitcher, is that he's aggressive. He's going to throw you strikes. If you ambush him and you get on the board, you can knock him out of a game with a 4.04 ERA. But, your hits have to find grass. Sometimes it's just as simple as that. So the Red Sox philosophy going in was this guy does not walk anybody. He is not going to miss. He's gonna pound the strike zone, and we need to be ready and be aggressive on that front. And unfortunately, it did not work for the Red Sox here in this one. 617-779-7937. One more segment to go before we pass you off to the Infinity Sports Network for the remainder of the evening. Some leftover Red Sox thoughts. A player that will not be returning for the remainder of the year, and a player that could potentially be joining the Red Sox. Do you see him as a fit? We'll talk about those next. Back here on WEEI, don't forget, the WEEI and Ness and Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon is tomorrow and Tuesday. It is going to be an awesome couple of days here on WEEI. So if you're able to donate, we'd certainly appreciate it. All the information will be given, starting with the Greg Hill Show, then Jones and Keith, and then WEEI Afternoons, all broadcasting live from Fenway Park. A lot of great guests are lined up. A lot of very poignant, important stories are going to be told over the next 48 hours on this station. So hope you're as excited as I am. This is my first Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon to be a part of here at EEI, so I'm very excited to see what it's all about and kind of get a lay of the land. So a great couple of days coming up here on the station. We're coming up on 6 o'clock. I'll let you go at that point as we'll hand it off to the Infinity Sports Network. A couple of news and notes around the Red Sox other than their loss to the Miami Marlins. Marcelo Meyer, season-ending surgery, should be about a three-month recovery. Alex Cora saying as long as everything goes according to plan, he'll be ready to go for spring training next year. Chris Cotillo said on Twitter his understanding of this Meyer situation is that surgery was always inevitable, but the hope was that they could get the wrist to a point where it was about pain tolerance and trying to play through. Clearly, the resumption of baseball activities didn't go as planned. So Meyer opted to get an injection in his wrist, again, to try to take down the pain and at least make it playable. He started playing catch, started doing some very low-level baseball activities, and they realized that it just was not going to be successful. So he finishes his first year in Major League Baseball, 44 games, a .228 average, 674 OPS, four home runs, three outs above average in the field, mostly at second, but also actually mostly at third while Alex Bregman was hurt. And he continues to be a bit of a mystifying character when you put all of these pieces together for the Red Sox. And of the three, the big three that you saw on display at varying points this year, Christian Campbell was the rookie of the month in April, then one of the worst hitters in baseball in May, and is now in AAA. Marcelo Meyer comes up out of necessity because of the injury to Bregman. Plays pretty well to start his career, but ends up cooling off, finishes with a .228 average, and is now hurt again and will miss the remainder of the year. And luckily, Roman Anthony to this point is panning out, but you've seen him the least out of the three. And what continues to be an interesting footnote in Marcelo Meyer's professional career to this point is the fact that he has not yet played 100 games in any professional season in his career. So the closest he got was 91 games in 2022. That was between A-ball and high A. Then last year it was 78 games between 2023, two different levels. It was high A and double A, 78 games. Played 77 last year, all in Portland. Played 43 in Triple A with Worcester this year, and then 44 for the Red Sox. So he finishes once again with 77 games played. That's going to be a story until it's not. You're going to have to see consistent health and performance from Marcelo Meyer before you can unequivocally say he's your shortstop of the future. And luckily for you, Trevor Story has had a career resurgence this year. He's got three more years, assuming that he opts into the remainder of his contract, which I think it's all but a certainty that he's going to. So that buys you a little bit more time to figure out what goes on with Meyer, but you have to wonder about that until you're proven that he can stay healthy and be productive for an entire season. The other half of this is Nathaniel Lowe, first baseman that was designated for assignment by the Washington Nationals. According to industry sources, this also from Cotillo on Mass Live, Boston is expected to be in the mix to sign first baseman Nathaniel Lowe. He's at a down year, .216 average, 16 home runs, 68 runs batted in, 665 OPS. He's been better against righties, .235 than against lefties, 174, but he's had a down year across the board. Has not been good defensively, has not been good offensively. And I was reading up about him, and we don't have enough time to get too far into this, but there are some questions about the work ethic. I was listening to a clip from a radio show, Grant and Danny, down in Washington, D.C. on 106.7 The Fan, talking about, and it was very interesting how they couched the discussion. He's not a clubhouse cancer is how the sentence started. I'm like, oh, God, but you're about to say but, and then say something that's kind of damning for the guy. It was described as he was meant to be a veteran that came in and helped usher in some young guys for Washington. They have a lot of young up and coming talent. He was supposed to be a guy that kind of took some of the pressure off the young guys and apparently The performance wasn't there, and the work ethic and just what they were hoping for from this guy wasn't exactly matching up. So Nathaniel Lowe ends up being DFA'd by the Washington Nationals. He was a guy who the Red Sox checked in on earlier in the season when Tristan Casas got hurt and they were scrambling to figure out first base. They ended up with the Abraham Toro and Romy Gonzalez platoon, which worked okay, but Toro has certainly gone through a bit of a slump recently. So it's going to be interesting to see. I would be more than fine with the Red Sox taking a flyer on this guy, but I was a bit concerned about the work ethic stuff, if I'm being honest. I will say that the Red Sox certainly have established the vibes and the culture on the fly enough where I'm like, maybe he could kind of fit in and blend in a bit better with a group that seems to be moving in the right direction. But there's also a flip side to that coin. Do you want to add a guy who has some questions around him in terms of how hard he's going to work and how well he fits in, adding into a group that has really kind of come together down the stretch? So many questions abound around Nathaniel Lowe, first base for the Boston Red Sox. We will leave it there. The Infinity Sports Network is coming up next, but make sure you tune in starting tomorrow, tomorrow early morning for the Greg Hill Show. Greg Hill Show, Jones and Keefe, WEEI Afternoons, all at Fenway as part of the Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon. Going to be a great couple days here on the station, so make sure you stay tuned for that. Want to thank Thomas Christie Fuley back behind the glass with me here this afternoon into early evening. Thank you to Zach Coe, who is producing the Red Sox as well. Have a great rest of your evening and weekend here in the greater Boston area. We'll talk to you again on Monday. See ya.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Escape the heat to True North Convenience Stores and get any size True Oasis Fountain Drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi Fountain Drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit DollarShaveClub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Game day or any day, your fit says it all. Hit up MLBShop.com for the latest jerseys, caps, hoodies, and accessories to keep you in the game all year long. Rep your team, rep your city, rep yourself. Gear up and game on at MLBShop.com, the official online shop of Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.